Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where your dreams can find a voice. I'm your host, Celine Chenoy. Thank you to all of you who return every week to tune in to become a better version of yourself. Make sure you hit subscribe if you haven't already, and rate our show if you enjoyed this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where your dreams can find a voice. I'm your host, Celine Chenoy. Thank you to all of you who return every week to tune in to become a better version of yourself. Make sure you hit subscribe if you haven't already and rate our show if you enjoy this episode. Nonverbal communication skills refer to the ability to communicate without the use of words. Over 80% of our communication is expressed nonverbally, making it a vital part of understanding what others are saying, as well as communicating our own thoughts and feelings more effectively. Body language expert Linda Clemens is here to show us how to decode nonverbal cues. Linda Clemens, CEO of Sisterpreneur Incorporated, is one of the top sales and nonverbal communications experts in the world. She is an award-winning record-setting sales producer, as well as one of the top sales trainers in the world in the resort timeshare industry, where clients have generated over $2 billion in sales. Linda has opened for or shared the stage with such notables as Oprah Winfrey, President Obama, Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, and Mary Jo White, SEC Chair. In this interview, Linda will offer her expert insights to unlock the secrets of people's nonverbal communication, including the ability to read facial expressions, understand body language, and effectively use eye contact. She'll share how we can apply these skills in personal and professional settings and take our interpersonal skills to the next level. Hi, Linda. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much. So I saw you speak at the Mindvalley event in Estonia a couple of years ago, and I have to say that I absolutely loved your presentation. It was super entertaining, and I gained a lot of value from it. And I actually applied some of the techniques that you shared with us during your talk, and it worked so well for me. So I'm super excited to have you on the show so that you can share your knowledge with our community.
Thank you so much. You know, it's always fun. And Celine, thank you for what you are doing with your audience and your mission and the people and the lives that you are touching by informing them, educating them, elevating them. And it's an honor for me to sit in your space and share with your audience. You know, I have the opportunity and I've been given the gift. I say this to everyone out there. If you have a talent, a skill, or a gift, you know, because, you know, you could be talented, you could be skilled, and you could be educated in an area. But if you have a gift, it is part of your mission, if you will, and your purpose on life to be able to touch others and share that gift. Because, you know, that's the thing that makes it so important. That's the thing I tell folks all the time that has you, I believe, to be immortal when you could transcend on. But your gift is in the hearts and the minds of others. So part of my area of expertise as a sales expert, nonverbal communications expert, some people call it behavioral specialist. You know, I just call it, hey, someone who's really in tune with other people, not just their words, you know, not just the tone of their voice, which is critical, but just in tune with what they're not saying that we can hear audibly. And that's the power of their nonverbal. So again, thank you for inviting me to share with your audience.
Oh, thank you so much for your kind words, Linda. That means a lot to me. And I have to say that you are absolutely amazing at reading people. Like, you're almost psychic. I remember you brought a couple of people upstage on the stage, and you were able to really say a lot about them and what they're feeling and what they're going through just by observing their their facial expressions, how their posture and everything. And I'm like, how does she know? How does she know so much?
So, you know, there's this. It's,
you're not psychic, video, right?
everybody keeps saying, it is so funny that you asked that. I, even in the corporate realm, people have come to me like after the training, because I'm also a sales expert, okay? So you can imagine, for those of you who have products or services, everyone is in sales because we're trying to persuade, convince, convey our information about our product or service. But every time I do a presentation, there's always one or two people that break away and they come to me. Are you psychic? Are you psychic? So to the listening audience and to those that are watching, what my sister is talking about here, there's a time in my presentation on the stage, I love being interactive, and hopefully maybe in the future, we can do a special session with your audience where maybe some of you could select to do a live Zoom, because I do the same thing that I did on stage. I actually do it on Zoom as well. So there was a part of the presentation where, we invited people, volunteers, to come on stage. And as Lena was saying, what was taking place was that I would ask them questions. So first of all, they would come on stage, the audience would clap, 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 clap. And I would ask them this, I would say this, giving them instructions. On a count of three, I'm going to ask you to freeze. Don't move. I don't want to see a twitch. I don't want to see anything. So like I would count to three, one, two, three, and they would freeze in the position that they were in. So the audience is listening. And then I would go down the row of each person and ask them a question. Now, why are the questions critical? For those that are listening, you and I both know there are questions that give us joy. There are questions that cause us to think, that would make us a little sad or angry, upset, you know, disgruntled, or shock or surprise. And it only takes, and I know for those of you who are listening to this wonderful show and the guests that she brings you, you are taking copious notes. And so there are questions that will evoke, write this word down, micro, M-I-C-O, expressions that will invoke micro expressions. So Linda, what does that mean? And for those that are watching, watch this. So if I'm talking about or having a conversation about, say my ex, just using this as an example, and you're my friend and you say to me, Linda, I'm so glad you're over him, girl. And I go like this. Yes, I'm glad. I'm so glad I'm over him. I'm moving on. Mr. Wright is right here for me and I'm moving on. And then all of a sudden, now I'm going my head like this, doing the sister snap, doing all of this. And then all of a sudden you say, Linda, it's a good thing you moved on. Because guess what? Here's the question. Guess what? I'm going to use a fictitious name. Charlie has moved on too. And then my facial expressions, I freeze. Why would I freeze? Why would I show the look of shock or surprise? Is because probably technically, emotionally, I probably have not moved on. So by reacting that way, that allows me, and this would allow you, to pursue on that path of questioning, because they just gave you what we call an emotional trigger. They gave you a sign. They gave you a cue that you are getting closer into them. And now you're understanding, wow, there must be something there. And that's what happens. I'm trained in analytical interviewing, and I call it soft interrogation, but it's based on those questions. So when I do that, and so my method is different from every body language expert out there. It's different. I believe, and so I'm told. So by them freezing, it allows me to see those micro expressions, those micro movements, those micro critical moments. And that allows me to continue that line of questioning.
And are micro expressions universal, Linda? Or
micro, yeah, you've done your homework.
Are they universal? Because I know that there are body language cues that are specific to certain cultures.
Absolutely. So the micro expressions, and for those of you who are doing the research and you look up Paul Ekman, and just look up Google, and Google's the client. So I got to plug in Google the seven emotions. Now, we know there are many more emotions, okay? But in a study, Paul Ekman did it. It was a global study that took several decades. And what he found, that the seven emotions, the universal emotions, are consistent. So, for example, if someone's happy, universally, they don't frown. They smile. You know, the zygomatic major muscles right around the ends of the mouth and the cheekbones go up, and the orbicularis oculi muscles, the eye, where we get the little squint lines, they brighten up. That's universal. When a little child is sad or pouty around the world, the pout expression on their face is universal. So the happiness, the sadness, you know, the frustration, the anger, the fear, right? The contempt and the disgust are the seven emotions. So it doesn't matter that even if someone is blind, and you scare them and they're fearful, they would have the same expression. So once you know the foundation of the seven emotions, and I help individuals who are salespeople, who are average, become above average, those that are above average become great, and those that are great become superstar and supernatural salespeople. And that's what I was when I was in the sales industry. That because by asking and crafting the right questions can trigger the right emotions or verify if it's on the track. So another example, let's talk about the emotions. When I'm watching or involved in cases, let's just say, and not wanting to be gory, but let's just say it's been in the news, not only local, globally, all over the world, where you say a mother has done something unthinkable to her children. If you are a parent out there, you don't have to be a parent. If the seed of humanity is in you, you would say, oh my gosh, how could someone do that to something that they birthed? Then you would see them during the interview, they will begin to cry. Now everyone's thinking, oh my gosh, poor woman, she probably didn't realize what she's doing. But I'm not thinking about that. I'm looking at her because if she's crying, and you know, your mom or someone might have familiar with the term, and I know you have a global audience, crocodile tears, you know, and crocodile tears is we're going through the motions like, but not one tear. And something happens that when we begin to cry emotionally, and it's connected to that emotional center of the brain, something happens in our physiology. When you're crying the tears, guess what? Eyes, nose, and mouth. The eyes and nose. Once the eyes start running, guess what else starts running? The nose. Mm. The voice gets crackly. All of this starts to take place. You just don't cry and no tears come out. You don't. And yeah. So it's those kinds of things that you begin to notice, and it helps you, which is one of the key things that I would love to encourage everyone in the audience, how important it is to pay attention. And to observe, be keen in your observation. So may I give them the first exercise right now?
Yes, Celine, please go ahead.
So it does, wherever you are watching this presentation or listening to this presentation, I want you right now to just stop in a safe place. If you're driving, don't do it. But I want you to just stop for a moment. If you're home, in your home, close your eyes. And I want you to name everything in the room that you're in. In other words, I want you to close your eyes and say, to the front of me, in my kitchen. So where I'm standing, to the front of me, for example, is my stove, is the overhead, is my cabinets. To the left on the stove, I have this study there. I just want you to practice being your observation skills to see how much you remember that's in the place that you are most familiar with. That's your first test. That's your first exercise. When I go to buildings and I speak all over the world, and I've been to Dubai, I love Dubai. So it's a hint. If you ever do a live gathering, love to come to Dubai. So what I do when I'm staying in hotels, you know, I have my team call ahead, and there's certain questions that they have to ask so that it won't cause a security alert. There's certain questions that I ask. And so that I could find out how many exits are in the building. I want to know how many exes are in the building. How many exes are in the building? How many floors are in the hotel? Where's the fire escape? Is also, when I'm in the facility, in the banquet hall, I want to know, is there an exit where the food suppliers come in the door? I want to know all of that. Your average person does not ask that. When they're checking in, they're probably asking, where's the nearest restaurant? Right. Do you have a business center? So because of what I do and practicing the observation, I do all of that so that if something happens, and I'm not saying this to scare you, I'm saying this not to to stress you out, but to impress you. I'm telling you this so that if something, as my nieces and nephews, using millennial vernacular, if you will, if something jumps off, okay, if the fire alarm jumps off, if something happens, you don't want to be hijacked by your amygdala. And being hijacked by the amygdala, the part of the brain, all the blood leaks from that part of the brain. You're not thinking right. Critical thinking. You're not thinking straight. You're not thinking that this program.
That's a reptilian part of the brain, right?
That's also known as the technical medical term is the amygdala, also known as the reptilian part of the brain, the fear, fight, flight part of the brain. And they call it the triune theory of the brain. Now the same psychologists and the same researchers are saying, oh, no, it's not separate parts of the brain. They're all connected together. And now they're calling the adaptive part of the brain. But to your audience that is listening and familiar with the term that you use, it's also known as the reptilian part of the brain because reptiles are in fear, fight, flight mode. That's why they don't make good pets. So if it's hijacked, then the blood rushes from that part of the brain to the lower extremities, primitive, so you can escape. However, if you are sane and going over routine and practicing, if there is a fire, I'm going to the right, to the left, because on the second floor, there is this. I'm not using the elevator. If there is this and this and that, here's the exit right here. I know people are going to do that. I literally do that. So that it becomes second nature. Because I guarantee you right now, there's a nursery rhyme, there's a poem, there's something that you learned in school when you were in elementary school that you might have forgotten what happened yesterday. But if someone says, do you remember this poem? Do you remember the story Red Riding Hood? Do you remember Little Mary Had a Little Lamb? Do you remember the jingle? Whatever that may be, you could recall it like this. This is what I do, and it helps train my brain. So that was a long answer, but I hope it was meaty.
Thank you. Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. In addition to the micro expressions, Linda, what are some other key body language cues that we should keep an eye out for? Because I know you mentioned you actually have a framework that you use called the 4 C's. Can you please talk us through those?
Okay, so let's talk first. Let's talk about the communication theory so we can all understand that. And that was the study was done by Dr. Maharabi, and it's well over 50 years ago. I don't believe anyone else has done an updated study, if you will. But based on his study, he was saying that our communication is broken up in our words, tone, and nonverbal. Meaning he gave percentages of 7% words. Others, debunk that or dispute it because what happens if you do not speak the same language, now the words are gone. Well, it doesn't mean that it's not that percentage. That was his study and your experience may be different. So 7% words, 38% tonality, and 55% nonverbal. So the bottom line is about 93% of our communication is nonverbal. The tone is so critical. And because it's not what you say and not how you say it, it's what they hear. So if I said to you, no, I don't want to eat that. I don't want to eat that cake. The tone is quite angry by the tone. It's defensive. So there's something behind the tone. So when I talk about the C's, that you know, I came up with there were 3 C's, and the C's are actually framework that most body language experts use. I like to add in other stuff all the time. I like to season it a little differently. So when reading someone's nonverbal, but it's very critical, is to know a person's norm. So think of normal, their norm. And another word you can use is baseline. And I know you might have had other speakers on your show before because you're familiar in your body of work, the terminology in nonverbal communication. But think of a person's baseline, their norm. So why is this important? If you have a young child that comes home from school every day and that child has a routine, and that routine is coming in, I don't know, taking off the backpack, I don't know what you kids are using today with technology anymore, getting their little laptop out or their technical device. They may go to the refrigerator, get a little snack, and they'll come back, either do the homework, if you will, or begin to play games. So they do it on Monday. They do it on Tuesday and Wednesday. But you notice that on Thursday, they didn't do it. You went, something happened again on Friday. The child didn't do it. Why are you concerned? Because the child is out of their baseline. They're out of their norm. So it's very, very, I'm going to say it three times, very important that you get to know a person's norm. That is why in social settings, you build rapport so we can get them out of the reptilian part of the brain so that they're comfortable and they're relaxed and they're doing that connection with you. So this is where you start your base. If you don't, and you jump into the seas and not get a person's norm, then it causes for prejudgment and or your biases. And you cannot be human and not have a bias.
Yeah. So Linda, is it safe to say that you need to observe their patterns over a certain span of time?
It doesn't have to be a certain span of time. If you're working with them, you can begin to do that in just minutes by having a conversation and building rapport. We like people that have commonalities with us, and that's the importance of building rapport. So when you have that kind of rapport, you notice let's say we're in a selling situation. Okay. So in a selling situation, automatically, if I'm having a meeting with you, I set up the appointment. This is what I'm thinking. I know that he or she or they are going to try to sell me something. So I'm going to be maybe a little guarded because I'm not yet ready to be sold. As a female or feminine energy, I may have a purse. Grab this here. I may have a purse, for example, and I'm sitting in the presentation. It could be live or doing virtual, and I'm holding my purse like this. Why am I holding my purse? I'm not going to take your purse because I'm thinking, oh, you want my money. You're not going to get my money. But as you begin to build rapport and start connecting with me, you'll notice that the arms will unlock. And maybe I'll set the purse to the side. And all of a sudden, I'm liking the conversation. My shoulders might have been squared up and tight, but now they're relaxed. I built the rapport. And that gives you the right to now observe and begin to ask questions. So it's critical knowing a person's baseline. If you are interviewing someone, you may not have 2 or 3 days unless your process is a 3 or 4 day process where I'm interviewing with you first, Celine, then I go before a team, and then the final person has to make a decision. That's a different thing, right? But what happens if you are not in that process? If you're not in the first phase, the second phase, or the third phase, then you built a rapport in the first phase, but I have to build that rapport with each person. So knowing a person's norm, who they are, and what and they're most comfortable on, here's your word, unstressed, where they're non-stressed at all. So when they're non-stressed, state that they're comfortable. Then you want to read the first C in clusters, making sure that you're watching for more than one movement. So when I say clusters, I'm speaking of a cluster of more than one movement. So here's our clusters. So if I come onto your wonderful show and I'm going like this, that's one movement. You or your audience may think, or you may say, or from your culture, who knows, may say that she's closed off, okay? Other cultures may think, well, that's how people stand. But here's what's happening. It's not what I'm doing. It's your perception that makes a big difference. It's not what I'm doing.
Just for the listeners, she's folding her hands right now.
Absolutely. I don't know if you're listening or watching later on. We're on the Zoom. So my arms are folded. My arms are folded. Then what would happen? Because you see my arms folded, then you walk out of the room or you turn off the broadcast because you think that I'm closed off if you're able to see it or hear it, what have you. And then next thing you know, I start rubbing my shoulders as if I'm cold. That's the second movement. And then the third movement, I put on a jacket. Well, those were three movements. Those are three micro movements or macro movements, if you will. Three movements there that probably give you an indication. There's a clue there. that she's probably cold. She's probably cold. Those cues indicated that I'm probably cold, with the last step being putting on a jacket or sweater or scarf. So it's very, very important. And when you're reading nonverbals, to read them in clusters. And my master's students, I teach them to watch for like many, many movements that lead up to different messages, if you will. The second C is congruency, making sure that your words, the tone, and the nonverbal are congruent. It's so important. So here's a little soundbite for you. If all three don't agree, there's a disconnect in the message between you and me. So it's so important to make sure that your movements are congruent with what you're saying. There, now, what if there is someone may be handicapped or have a disability? And disabilities can be visible. And I share with those in corporate America, there are also disabilities that are invisible. You will know that in observing their baseline. Well, I notice that when she speaks or he speaks, she's not moving her left arm, okay? Or she slightly moves her left arm. She's not wearing a cask, she's not wearing a sling. I just notice her arm doesn't look like a prosthetic, but she's not. So that could be an invisible disability that, because I'm not expressing that, you may not have any idea. So you want to make sure that you are aware of congruency in what someone is saying. You know, when people are being truthful, you know, there's a certain things that they begin to do when they're being truthful, when they are being deceptive.
Well, I know that's a very common question. I'm sure people ask you this all the time.
Well, one of the things you want to remember, if someone says to you, here's an easy example, and they're asking you, and you say to them, okay, what happened? I heard the shot. What happened? So your hand, your palms are exposed. Your facial expressions are wide open. You're shocked. You say, what happened? I heard the shot. Do you know what happened? And the person says to you, I don't know. I was standing over there to the right side. The word saying right side, but their hands are motioning towards the left.
Oh.
That's
what
not
about eye contact.
Okay, so when people say eye contact, and I get this all the time from those individuals who are students of NLP, okay, neurolinguistic programming. I am not a student of NLP because of one of the great speakers and great minds that I had the opportunity to work for and be one of their speakers. It was forbidden that any of the speakers use that, rather than use the work from the NLP practitioners. I think it was Bandler, just studied the work of Ericksonian, the godfather of whence the work mm-hmm. has come. So eye movements. So, you know, people often say right to recall. You know, here's the deal. If you know a person's baseline, and a person's baseline, that when they're talking to you and they're looking around, they may be a visual communicator. They may be pulling down the data. They may be sharing parts of the story that could be quite emotional, and they're maybe trying to recall, let me think. You know, so if they're normally, their eyes and they're normally expressive, and they're doing that when they're saying something to you, okay, that doesn't mean just because they're not looking at you in the eye that they're being deceptive, because certain cultures, direct eye contact, particularly some Asian cultures, is deemed disrespectful. They may be looking at the throat area. Those that are listening, allow me to describe, take your hands, take your fingers. And for the men out there that got an Adam's apple, go below the Adam's apple. The ladies out there, there's a little dip in the throat area. Okay. That's the suprasternal notch. Okay. So in Asian cultures, rather than direct eye contact, they may be looking at you at the suprasternal notch. Also, if you're being deceptive, being female, male could be tight around the collar if they're wearing a suit and tie. But being female, you may have the unconscious movement of stroking your suprasternal notch while giving me details and speaking. So if I say, Miss Jones, where were you on February 13th when your son was allegedly involved in this. If she's protecting him, she may be stroking her suprasternal notch, and that may not be her norm. If I'm asking her, who is your son? What's his name? How many children do you have? How long have you lived here? These are first level questions that give you facts. So it's knowing their baseline so that you will know. Think of baseball when they're off base in their answers. Now, doesn't mean they're lying, because you made that. And the way you'll know that you're getting a nonverbal alarm alert error. The way you'll know is in that first 3 to 4 seconds by the way they respond. That alone, the science behind the first 3 to 4 or 7 second window is a whole show by itself, teaching you things that the CIA, the FBI uses. That is a whole show by itself. So again, noticing, knowing their norm, watching for clusters, making sure what they say and their actions are congruent. If you told me that you were over to the right side of the building and you're pointing to the left, right side people know. As a matter of fact, if you're over to the right side of the building, you're so passionate about it that your body would unconsciously start moving. I was over there to the right. So for those that can't see what I'm doing, I'm extending my hand towards the right and my upper shoulders are moving that way as if I was going back towards the right. So if I say I was over to the right and pointed to the left, I'm actually, and not no excitement or passion even in the movement, I'm actually pointing to the scene of the crime. Because the amygdala, your reptilian part of the brain, is not going to lie. It is also known as the truth part of the brain. And so that's so important. So back, so we're talking about the congruency.
The four C's. Yeah.
The congruency, the clusters, and the other C is the context. The fourth C is normally a bonus. So she's making me give you all the bonus. So, and the context. So I know that the year that I was in Dubai, it's a dry heat, but it was hot.
It's really hot here, most of the time. So it's a hot country.
I thought Arizona and Vegas was hot. This was hot. Okay. So it was really, really hot. So being that hot, if I was walking around, and I got to think about this, in a fur coat, and I'm going to say, be it real or faux fur, whatever floats your boat, okay? If I was walking around in a fur coat, and it's just extremely hot that I can fry an egg on the roof of a car, and I'm walking around in a fur coat that's out of context, if I'm getting on a plane headed towards Dubai from the States with no check-in luggage, no carry-on luggage, not even a garment bag with one, just a suit or change of clothes, nothing. It's out of context. And one of the things I tell my airline clients, that's one of the things you want to check. If someone ever checks in, it's a little thing, you don't need to think about it. If someone checks in with no luggage and they are starting their origin of their destination, I would be wondering, I will be asking a series of questions as to what's going on, especially if the distance is a long distance. I want to know what's going on. So making sure it's in the right context. If all of a sudden, and when working with law firms and, you know, and jury selection is very critical. So if the criminal is in a courtroom and the opposing attorney is showing videotape on the screen, hear me out, of the gory scene of which the guy who said he was supposed to be a serial killer, that he did all that. And the audience and the jury, and people just can't, and they warn you, just like they do on television, that the scenes could be harmful to you or uncomfortable, discomfort to you. So they give you that warning. So they give it to the warning in the courtroom. And then all of a sudden, the man who's being accused these heinous crimes is looking at the videotape that they're playing in the courtroom. And all of a sudden, something happens to his face. You see with the 43 facial muscles, you see his zygomatic major muscles begin to move, the ones we use to smile. And you are witnessing a little smile leak out, leakage. It's called duping, like you're duping someone. Delight. Now, that is out of context. Yeah. For someone who did not do it to look at the film that they're playing of the victims, the gory, heinous scene, and smile, the person that didn't do it would probably look away. It's out of context. And so I know that got a little dramatic there.
Yeah.
Hopefully your listeners love it.
Proving your point. But Linda, all of this is great. How do we prevent ourselves from getting a bit too focused on every single cue that we observe in a person, especially when the stakes are high, if we're dealing with our boss or a partner that we're about to marry? How do we maintain perspective and not get too paranoid about the patterns or something that seems out of context, as you say? How can we stay balanced and not be like an FBI detective?
And just to toss out, because someone who is analytical out there is probably listening, wait, she's got to give us the fourth C. And the fourth C is culture. Because when the saying that goes in Rome, do as the Romans do. So for those of you that were writing everything down, the fourth C is culture. Okay, so one of the things, it's one of my favorite quotes is by the late Dr. Wayne Dyer. Mm. And I love his book, The Power of Intention. I read 4 books a month. So put that on in your reading library. But there's a quote that he says, and it goes like this. And this is going to help you, and it's going to address your question. Be open to everything, but attach to nothing. Be open to everything. So I'm open for the joy and the gifts and the talents and the possibility and the information and the education that this person standing before me is going to bring. So I'm open. If we, and here's the trigger that I believe that helps me. I can't say what other behavioral experts do. I can't say what other body language experts do. Some people say, they always ask, do you turn it off? I approach everything like a child with childlike curiosity. Every person that I encounter, there's a snack in the States that many kids experience that's been around forever. It's called Cracker Jacks, okay?
I know.
So you know Cracker Jacks, right? And in the Cracker Jacks, anytime we as kids would get a Cracker Jack, you know what the purpose for us, we're gonna eat it. But what the first thing we wanted to get to, remember that, was the prize that was always a little toy, or the prize that was always hidden at the bottom. So we're excited and not knowing what it is. Why don't you look at everyone and look at them as if there is a hidden treasure? And then you're going to get to that treasure. So you're open and you're suspending. Now, notice what I'm telling you, and you listen to the words that I'm using. I'm not saying you're canceling out the biases. They're part of who you are. They're part of your culture. They're part of your background. They're part of your environment, your surroundings. Even companies have a culture. You know, large conglomerates have a culture. Walmart has a culture. You know, Google has a culture. Every airline has a culture. There's culture. All your large businesses have a culture. So what I'm saying to you, if any biases that you have, sports teams have a culture. If there are any biases that you have, all I'm asking you that when you see me, studies have shown, you begin to size me up by looking at my gender, the color of my skin, my hair, my clothing. Well, you know, you're looking at all of these things because that's the thing that triggers your biases. She's not dressed the way we're dressed. She doesn't look a certain way. You know, you don't expect your surgeon to walk in coming in to prepare for surgery. What do you think when all of a sudden you see him dressed in rock gear? Because you didn't know that he was in a rock band. So he comes in, you know, he just spray paint the Tipperary stuff in his hair, but it was emergency surgery. He had to get to you. He didn't have time to wash the crap out of his hair. So he just got to get in the scrub in. But you witness him coming in and telling you it's going to be all right. And you're thinking, this is the award-winning, most accredited surgeon like this because of your biases. Thinking that all surgeons, all doctors, all lawyers, and it is our biases that get us in trouble. And it is our biases that allow so many elderly people and young people and people in general to be conned by those in the financial industry, the biases of what we see success looks like. So if you say to your biases, and I talk to my biases, and says, look, I'm going to a networking event. My mission is to meet as many wonderful people as possible where I can add value to their lives and perhaps they can reciprocate and add value to mine. My mission, if you choose to accept it, and your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to go and find the prize in every human being, the gift that's often buried in. And that's what I do. That's one of the things that you could do. You could say, look, I'm going to look at a situation from three areas. You know, if someone's having a conversation with me, I'm not going to look at them and say, okay, he or she looked to the left, looked to the right. Oh, they looked down, they looked away. Oh, they're not going to do that. I'm not doing that. I'm going to, if someone's giving me information, as they say, as Celine say, in your area of expertise, and I'm asking you a question and I meet you and I say, Celine, I need help on this. I need your help on this. So, and you're sharing the information. I'm not going to ask myself or say to myself, judging you, says, does she really know what she's talking about? Does she really know what's going on? No, I'm going to be in student mode. Everyone write this down. I'm going to be in student mode because now you just became the teacher. I'm asking you a question that you're giving me advice to tell me what I need to do, to give me instruction. I'm not going to be in judgmental mode. I'm in student mode. And what do? Students lean in. There was a study that was done that college students that deemed most successful in their tests and in their scores, they found that when the professor was lecturing in this study, those students were leaning in. So I'm in student mode leaning in. What if you came to me and asked me for advice? Then I go into teacher mode. Teaching in my movements, giving instructions, using my hand gestures to be animation and do demonstrations. And then there's an argument that's taking place in your office or in the event that you're at. And the people that are in the discussion or argument or debate, whatever you may perceive it to be, there's a little conflict there. Here's the challenge. Both of the individuals are friends of yours. Uh-oh. Well, okay. So now that forces you now to be neutral. We have a tendency to do it all the time when people say, you tell her, what do you think? What do you give us? What is your opinion? And we go into our defense mechanism. We'll say, first of all, I love you both. Why do we say that? Because we don't want to cast sides. So why am I telling you that? So if you see that before you cast judgment, what if the other friend did something to you? Did something to you, you found out that they just told a little lie about something. They went to a party and they didn't invite you. Now they're in an argument with your other friend. Your bias will allow you to take the side of the other friend because you're already upset with the one that lied to you and you don't even know what the argument is about. All because of that bias. Well, if she lied to me, she probably started the thing. So here's what I'm saying to you. Here is another mode that you can go into when you see things that are happening, when you're in a meeting and you want to get all sides, you go into observer listener mode. You go into your observation mode. So the observer listener is observing. I'm listening to, so Kevin, tell me what your thoughts are. Celine, your thoughts are. And I'm not giving any comments or judgment. So if you could begin to train yourself that way, you'll spend more time mastering the different modes than sending your biases on vacation. And that allows the other things to turn off. Because here's what takes place. As you are asking the question and observing, you are listening to the words, the tone, and the movement. And that's where your focus is on when you're in observation mode. When you're a teacher should scan the room to see if all the students got it. You notice that? And when they don't, the teachers can tell. They can go, they'll go something like this. Maybe I'm not clear. They'll say something just like that. Maybe I'm not clear. Let me explain it this way, because they see the expressions of the audience or the room that they didn't get it. So, you know, you're going to ask yourself, am I a teacher? You know, am I the observer or am I the student? And put yourself based on that situation so that allows you to keep from, in my opinion, being judgmental.
Yeah. And that curiosity mindset is so key, Linda. And I know it's a challenge for so many people these days because we're so self-centered and we tend to focus on what's going on inside our world and we're engrossed in our own thoughts. So we have to step away from that and really get into that observation mode, as you described, because I feel that people are increasingly finding it hard to do that. They're so immersed in their own world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, Linda. So I think we're almost at time.
I know.
But thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today. It's been fascinating. And I know our audience will really appreciate all the wonderful information that you shared with us today. So thank you so much for being here.
You're more than welcome. And I want to leave your audience with a power quote that I often use when I'm on stage, and it's by Emerson. And I'm going to clementize it, if you will. And the quote goes like this: I cannot hear what you are saying because who you are being is getting in the way. I cannot hear what you're saying because who you are being is getting in the way. How you show up speaks a lot to your truth. So just go out there and be the best you, act the best you, demonstrate the best you. And thank you for your time.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for ending on such a powerful note, Linda. And I just want to let everyone know that if you're interested in learning more about Linda's coaching services, or speaking and training services, you can visit her website, lindaclemens.com. The link will be in the description.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.